Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Jason.
Hello.
And just Jason. It's just the two of us, and we are here to talk about kids' movies and whether or not your target audience is an excuse for phoning it in or not having a deep story or whatever you want. But basically, is the sentence, well, it's a kids' movie, a reasonable defense? That's what we want to get into. But before we get into that, Jason, what have you been enjoying this week? What's good?
Hades 2 came to Game Pass this week, and I have the number of hours I've spent is disgusting.
It's such a good game.
I did just beat the last fight with Kronos, I assume, based on where I'm at in the story. Moments before we started recording, I didn't even finish the final cutscene conversations because we had to start, but I was really struggling against Typhon a lot more than Kronos.
Typhon is a hard one sometimes in that game.
Yeah, I could only do it if I got really good hexes. Otherwise, I just could not figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
But I only beat Hades once in the first game. I found it a lot harder in a lot of ways, but I'm enjoying this one more, probably in part because I'm more successful, but I also just find the balance of the different boons and unlockable things and the different gameplay options just more, just a little more dynamic and broad than the first one, which was also great. So it's been fun.
Yeah, I say when a game is a refinement on an already great game,
exactly,
it's hard to go wrong. And yeah, I think Hades 2, it took me a minute to, because I had sunk an obscene amount of time into Hades 1. So 2, there was a little bit of a learning curve of the new combat systems and some of the new tools that are at your disposal. And I think learning also the new boons and the new gods and, you know, which ones have good synergy together. And then there's the whole moon hex thing and building that out. And
yeah,
it's a game that I really liked because even with all that complexity, you can also just kind of go in and still have fun. Yes, there are good builds that make it easier, but even on my bad runs, I still do okay. It's just, it's taking a little longer than I would have liked. Because
right,
then there's busted
exactly.
runs where you just melt things.
Yeah. I've been taking it as I'm going to play through the story with all of the combos that I know work for me and I've built the pattern around. And then I'm going to go back and play with the other. I literally have only used one weapon the entire game. And
got real good at that one
thing.
Yeah,
and now I'll go back and try the other ones out. And, as I do the other types of runs, and I think they just put in a new mode when it came to Game Pass. I haven't been able to try because you have to beat the game first, but something about Dream something or others where the levels get mixed around and are randomized.
Oh, okay.
I don't know anything really beyond that because I haven't unlocked it yet.
I heard that was coming, but I had not. Yeah. I have not dipped into that yet. I've been actually back on UFO 50 and I started playing Dredge. And Dredge, that'll be my thing for the week. Have you played that one at all?
No.
It's a weird game where you play as a fisherman, but I don't think you ever see yourself, at least as far as I know. You just see the little boat that you scoot around in.
Oh,
and
yes.
I've
seen this game. I've not played it. Yeah.
You fish stuff up and you improve your boat and your fishing capabilities and you're trying to solve a mystery and it's fun. I really like it. My other thing that I wanted to bring up is an older thing, but I really like it and have for a while and I think you'll appreciate it. There was in 2005, this game called Stubbs the Zombie, which is just you play as a zombie, that's the game. But what I love about Stubbs the Zombie is the soundtrack. I had the soundtrack before I ever played the game. And it is, think 2000s indie and 2000s indie pop, and then 1950s covers. So it's Ben Queller singing Lollipop, The Ravenettes, My Boyfriend's Back, Death Cab for Cutie covering Earth Angel, Rose Hill Drive doing Shaken All Over, Cake doing Strangers in the Night. And that's the vibe. The Dandy Warhols cover All I Have to Do Is Dream. The Flaming Lips cover If I Only Had a Brain. It's just a weird, cool little album full of songs that you never thought you would hear by those artists, but in a way that works really well. So yeah, that's, I re-listened to it this morning. I've listened to it for, you know, 20 years now, because I think I actually found it like when it came out. And it's just really good and really fun, and I highly recommend people seek it out.
Nice. Love some unexpected covers.
Before we get into this conversation, where can people find you online?
These days, I mean, I'm mostly on Letterboxd. Just look up my name, Jason Flatt, but technically still on Twitter, Instagram, even if I'm not using them, Flatter_you.
And you can find me on Blue Sky at most always Alex. And with that, let's get into this. So this idea came up, I think, pretty much right after the Mario Galaxy movie came out, because this is what people were talking about, of like, there's no plot, there's no character arcs. But then kids still seem to enjoy it for the most part. I haven't really read anything about children hating it, but I've seen a lot of frustrated adults. Has that been kind of your experience?
My experience so far, I feel like, you know, neither of us have children. I have only, most of my friends with children are a little too young to be watching it themselves, but I work with kids pretty much every day. And I don't feel like I'm hearing the same amount of every single day talking about Mario the same way that I did after the first one came out. But I'm also am still hearing the occasional, you know, Rosalina conversations going on with the kids, or just the general, like, yes, we all think that this movie is fun and we had a good time from the general children verse out there.
Yeah, which is, I mean, we'll get into it, but I think it is interesting that the target audience is like, this is great, and everyone else is the one saying this is not great or this is trash. And I feel like a lot of that, too, is informed by people tend to evaluate things from the scope of like, well, what did I have as a child? Like that's almost like the litmus test of, or not litmus test, that's a bad word for this, but like that's the thing to test it against. Yeah, like that's
still a litmus, you know, test.
And I think it's, for me, that doesn't really work, because I think that the thing that you remember are the movies that you loved, and that your nostalgia kind of inherently taints your view of it. Does that feel like too broad of an accusation?
No, it's so true. I mean, the number of times I hear some millennial podcaster, younger millennial in particular, go, oh my gosh, remember how incredible X, Y, or Z movie was? Now I'm trying to remember what the one I was thinking of is.
Zathura.
Sure. not the one I hear often, but probably one that comes up. No.
It's Space Jumanji. What's not to love?
The number of times that I hear some like younger millennial podcaster go, wow, The Road to El Dorado, what a great movie that was. And I'm like, have you seen it recently? It's actually it's not that great of a movie, like, it just as far as a movie, but it's also incredibly racist and like but it's one that we grew up watching and had a cool soundtrack, and so we don't like remember how not all that exciting of a movie it is, or all of the things that are not like particularly positive about it. We're totally tainted by the nostalgia of the things that we grew up thinking was cool.
Yeah, and I think that that's the, like, the, yeah, it's you overestimate it because you're nostalgic for it, and also you're usually not nostalgic for bad things. Like, every now and then it's like, oh, here's a terrible thing that we all watched as children, but, like, let's trauma bond over it,
maybe,
or whatever.
Maybe nostalgic for mediocre things, but not outright terrible things very often. When you're, if you're obsessed with something that was really bad, it's probably not nostalgia. It's probably something else.
Yeah, it's the one VHS that your family had in the car for your road trips or whatever. Like,
right? Yeah,
which, because I think that that's also
Mickey
part
Mouse,
of it is
Three
as
Mouse
much as
tears for me.
Oh yeah, like, because you have to look at like what are you nostalgic for, and then you have to look at like, well, what did I have access to? And I think that a big thing that colors perspective on whether or not kids media as a whole has improved or declined is like, you don't realize how limited your access to media as a child was if you are now in your 30s, where like streaming wasn't a thing. Maybe you had cable, maybe you had TiVo, you know, early on, but you couldn't just turn on your computer and watch literally anything you wanted. And so your scope is a lot smaller, and also your parents probably didn't want to waste money on bad movies. So there is a good chance that the movies you grew up with were better movies or movies that adults could tolerate. Right. Like, these are just all the things that don't get controlled for when people say back in my day. And because I think the other thing is that people will also then point to the movies that hold up, and that's like its survivorship bias thing, you know, like the diagram of the plane full of bullet holes. And it is this weird thing of like, I mean, same with like 80s music. When people say, I love 80s music, it was better. And it's like, well, you listen to good 80s music, because that's all that really is still getting circulated or played on the radio or dropped in. Right. Like, those are the needle drops in movies. Like, so it's like, not that the 80s didn't make good music, but the 80s made a lot of music that did not survive the 80s.
Yes. I mean, I will say, like, as someone who watches an inordinate number of 80s movies, all the way down to the Dreckest of Dreck, like, there is something to be said for sure about the way that things were made in different times. Mm-hmm. Are very different than the way that things are made now. And that is not even necessarily a comment on their quality, because something can be made for cheap, but it can be higher quality than something that's made for expensive or with more fancy technology today. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, when you watch an 80s movie, it's not just the 80s technology that was available to make that product or to make 80s music. It's also the kind of content that was in that is just very different as time goes on, because the kinds of moralizing that goes into the art, or the kinds of the way that stories are being told, or the way that, you know, lyrics are being chosen, these are all things that grow and change over time. And you can have a legitimate preference for the way that things were in a different time period without it being entirely about nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the argument that we're working through here is, I get, maybe it's a little bit about separating what is the thing that we're just nostalgic for versus the thing that was genuinely different or better or worse in a previous time.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm thinking of the examples of things that I'm nostalgic for that maybe are not considered as great by people who didn't grow up watching them, where I'm like, the last time I watched the original High School Musical, I gave it a 5 stars. I was like, this is not only just something that I'm nostalgic for, but I genuinely believe that this is a really well-written piece of movie, and that they were doing some really cool, smart things here. Maybe that's just because I'm biased about it, though, and it's Sky High was one that I watched with friends recently. I don't how genuinely good or bad that movie is, because I just saw it in fifth grade and thought it was really cool then, and we had a good time watching it now. But like, when I go on Letterboxd and see everyone responding to Mario, it's like, there are only two camps of people. There's the 3 stars and below who are like, this is overbloated nostalgia Easter egg garbage. And there's people who are like, mm-hmm. I had fun. Why are you all complaining?
Yeah. And I think that's especially an important argument with like kid movies, is like, for children, the bar for good is, I'm not even going to say lower, it's different. Like, I think I put it somewhere later in the notes, but it's like, kids do not care about deep, complex things. They don't need a nuanced take on monarchies or whatever from Mario. They just want to see Mario. Like,
right.
It's, you know, like, and so that's, I think that's also where the whole, like, is it, this is bad? And it's like, well, but what's your metric and what's your lens? Like it is easy to critique children's media as an adult.
Yeah.
Like,
we don't need to. And when we're talking about kids media here, we're talking really like elementary school, middle school-ish age, not mm-hmm. the like 0 to 5 year old Cocomelon type of garbage that scientists have all said is trash. Don't show your children Cocomelon.
This is literal brain rot that you're just injecting into their eyes.
Like, the technical mark of good children's media is just like, does it have some sort of, besides, are they entertained? Like, is there some sort of takeaway they can have from this story that is positive? Because storytelling for thousands of years, for all of human history, has been about trying to relay important messages, morals, cultural things to people through story. And, you know, at its very, very base, story is just like a thing that happened in the past to somebody or something. And while we don't need to dumb things down for children necessarily, because kids can grasp big concepts, or they can learn to understand what bigger concepts meant as they get older if they miss some of the finer details and things. It also doesn't need to be like kids don't need super detailed, intimate storytelling to get, in the case of the Mario movie, a story about family and how it's important to, you know, treat people kindly and well, and to stand up for the people you care about. Like, all of those are really simple messages that come across pretty reasonably in this movie.
Mm-hmm. But Mario doesn't give a sermon at the end, so.
Yeah, look.
Or does he? I don't know. I also, no, something you said made me think, like, I think part of this too that's interesting is that it assumes that kids are incapable of identifying a bad movie. And they're not.
Right.
Like, they absolutely will watch something and be like, that's dumb, or that didn't make sense, or why did they do this? Like,
kids aren't
kids
out
can
here
pick
watching the emoji
stuff.
Movie, all right? Like, they know that.
Yeah,
they
the
know
fact
it's
that
trash.
The emoji movie failed, yeah, that really tells us
something.
They're
not out here rewatching storks every 5 minutes. they can pick.
Yes.
They can pick out the winners.
Yeah, it's just so weird.
Just because
weird.
Minions
and
annoy you doesn't mean that kids don't love them.
And there are adults that love them, like, yeah. That, you know, like, that's a, that it's just
the
not
minions,
your taste.
The minions
that doesn't
have grown
mean it's
on
bad
me over the years, for sure.
I still don't like them, but I respect that you have changed on that. But yeah, I think it's just interesting because so much of it feels like it's twofold. It's either like, this is bad because I'm nostalgia brained about my childhood, which, you know, everyone is to some degree, or it is, this is bad because, yeah, it's not doing some like really big complex thing for my child, which, like, again, we don't need that. Like, your kid doesn't need to watch like an A24 movie to learn about sharing. They can just watch, you know, an episode of Recess or whatever and learn about sharing.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting too, because there's a really funny, very human, very dumb tendency that people have to, like, my childhood or my formative years are when we got it right. And that's everything from, like, we had good movies, which also, for the millennials who talk about how, like, we had good movies as kids or whatever, I want you to also think about how often people talk about the traumatic things that they watched as children, like, and then turn around and are like, and isn't that great? Isn't Atreyu in the Swamp of Sadness losing Artax great?
Right. When, like, I was traumatized,
so which
by
is
the
it?
Bridge
was it?
To Terabithia, it was a really formative moment in my childhood. Like, okay,
yeah,
great. It's not a good movie. It's,
right? Like, you don't need to traumatize children to make things good.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, why can't we have these cool, dark fantasy movies for kids anymore? Like all of the, you know, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, you know, 80s stuff. And I'm like,
maybe kids don't like seeing that.
Because actually, those weren't successful movies at the time.
Yeah, those are movies
really,
that got a cult following later.
They're really fascinating to look at now, and, like, it's really cool animatronic work, puppetry and stuff, but, like, Faulkner, not a huge success with the kids.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, there's certain programming that's designed to teach children lessons, obviously, and is meant to play on kids' television stations that parents can feel more comfortable and caregivers can feel more comfortable with their kids watching X, Y, or Z thing because it's meant to have a clear stated lesson at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes more obvious than other times. Sometimes you have a Mario movie that is designed to be a four quadrant movie for everyone of every age. And yes, it appeals to children, but it's not meant to have you know, big, clear moral stance at the end that you're supposed to learn a lesson from. It's not the Paw Patrol movie. It's the Mario movie. Like, the specific complaints that I've seen levied against it in the realm of why do they do this to kids' movies which I would say they do this to all movies. It's not just the kids' movies. Yep. You're just not paying attention. The big ones are like, have you seen it?
The Mario movie?
Yeah.
No, but I've read about it, so don't worry about spoilers.
Not that this is a spoiler, just more just so I know if you have know the context fully from seeing it. But like, one of the big ones is that, like, Yoshi is introduced in this movie, having been teased in like a post-credit scene at the end of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they introduce Yoshi is by literally just doing a quick little gag about how all of a sudden he's part of the crew. And everyone loves Yoshi, and Toad is like makes two jokes early on and a few throughout the movie of like, where did this guy come from and why are we hanging out with him all of a sudden? Why do we all love him? And it's just like, I see all these complaints about like, why did they just throw Yoshi into this? Why couldn't they just why are we pretending like all of a sudden there's a new character and no one's noticing? And I'm like,
yeah,
one, did you want to spend 7 extra minutes on Yoshi's backstory, on how he found himself in this pipe and why he became friends with Mario all of a sudden? Because he,
yeah,
like, no, we don't want to waste that time. And two, in real life, have you ever just like showed up at your friend's house and there's a new friend and all of a sudden they're part of the group? It happens all the time. It's very normal. Like,
yeah,
this is a real life experience. And frankly, if anything, it's a great way of showing like you can just meet somebody and become friends with them. You don't have to go through a whole arduous journey together to become mm-hmm. friends now. Like,
well, and there's also no amount of showcasing that you can do to set. Like, there were people who watched 24 and were like, how come no one ever goes to the bathroom on this? And it's like, yeah, I get that it's in real time, but like they're also showing you the important parts of what's happening in real time. Like, they don't have to show everything. The only time that I've ever wished a movie kind of explained like anything about something that I like really comes to mind is the first time I watched the original Spider-Man movie, when it goes from him being, you know, in a amateur wrestling thing to him having the full Spider-Man costume. And that movie really drove home just how poor Peter was. So as a kid, I was like, that's kind of weird that he just got that suit and they don't talk about it. But as an adult in hindsight, I'm like, yeah, they don't need to. It doesn't matter. Like, it's not going to be an interesting story.
It's like it would be a totally different conversation if the movie revolved around Yoshi as like the emotional arc of the
yes.
movie, right? If the movie ended with Mario doing a classic famous jumping off Yoshi and to reach the goalpost
and Yoshi kicking Yoshi into a lava pit.
Yoshi falls into a lava pit, exactly. And the movie had started with that there was no like reason why they had a bond and you just suddenly got rid of this character in a traumatic way, like, or dramatic way, that would be a different conversation. Then we're like, are you, you're not doing a setup and payoff in a dramatically satisfying way, and you're also throwing away this character that is, you're just, you know, whatever. This is a what
although
if,
what they could have done is have it where Yoshi is just like, jump off my back, and Mario's like, you'll die, and he's like, do it, and then Yoshi hits one of those helicopter power-ups and just flies
honestly,
off.
Honestly, I am shocked that they didn't do one of these. I
would have loved that,
because they do so many like visual game reference things. I'm like, I couldn't believe they didn't do one of these. They must be saving it for the third one,
for Super Mario Brothers 3 : Yoshi's Island.
Yeah,
it's
honestly
just about Yoshi.
Yeah. Third one, definitely going to introduce Wario. There's no way they're not.
Oh, but seriously?
That's my prediction. The post-credit tease is for Daisy, but I think that they're going to go to like the Daisy Kingdom and they're going to discover a Wario there who's just like annoying backwards Mario, and it'll be really funny. Mm. But anyway.
Honestly, that would be fun. I kind of like I don't know if you played A Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when they do the whole like, here's like low rule instead of high rule, and they introduce all the like doppelgangers who are like different from their originals. I kind of like the idea where they're like, no, he is our Mario. He just sucks at it and burps constantly.
Yeah,
like
I can see
like that's
that.
Fun. That's a great premise.
And this is a segue into one of the other complaints I keep seeing of like, oh, there's just too much referential stuff in Easter eggs. And I'm like, first of all, you're the same nerds that were screaming over this in theaters 10, 15 years ago, every time a Marvel movie did it.
Right, they put a Ten Rings flag in the background of a shot, and you're like, oh, right. You know what that means.
And the same people who, they started complaining that, well, why do we have to explain every single thing that happens in every single scene, that, like, we did finally stop doing quite as intensely in blockbusters in the last few years, mm-hmm. the way that it used to be, you know, oh, well, how did he get that glove that he's holding in his hand? We have to have a whole six scenes on it later to learn the backstory of the glove. Like, the same people who hated that now want more context. I'm just like, I don't understand
but I'm imagining if they had done like a hard cut as soon as Tony got the glove and did a whole like heist walkthrough with like the sliding screens popping in and Tony explaining how he's going to get the glove. Yeah. Would it have made that a kind of a dog shit movie? Absolutely. But I would have been obsessed with that creative choice.
Yeah. It's because the other piece is like the complaints about it being overstuffed, where like there's just too many characters and they're not together. And so you Mario's barely even in the movie. It's all about Peach and it's all about,
well,
whatever.
We don't need more
like,
Chris Pratt as Mario.
I'm like, first of all, we don't need to hear Chris Pratt's terrible. All of the voice acting except for Charlie Day is pretty bad in these movies. But Donald Glover does no wrong, but it's just really silly that he's playing Yoshi, who just says Yoshi a few times. And that's the whole
thing. That's insane.
It's hilarious. And also his press for this movie has been so great because he like clearly is a huge Mario player. And like every time he's doing an interview, he knows the answer to every trivia question about every game.
Oh yeah.
Especially the ones he grew up on. But like the fact that you cast him as someone who literally just says Yoshi a bunch of times and that's it is so
silly. Oh yeah,
that's
silly. Up there with I Am Groot.
I
was listening to a podcast where it was Donald Glover was in Japan doing an interview with someone and he was like, oh, where do you guys normally do this? And they were like, oh, we're based out of Silver Lake in California. And he was like, why are we in Japan? Like, I live, like, we could have done this at home.
So funny.
Which, like, honestly, fair. But that podcast also had, they were reviewing the movie, but podcaster Justin McElroy had an anecdote where he was talking about how he took his kids to go see it and he was like, and we've been trying to work with our kids on like identifying themes and understanding what movies are about. And so I was, you know, talking to my daughter and I was like, what was Frozen about? And they were like, love. And what was Frozen 2 about? And they were like, change. And what was Super Mario Galaxy, the movie, about? And they were like, Mario.
fair.
And it's like, I get it. Like the movie is just a vibe. It's just jam packed. It's full of references. It's characters. It's silly. Part of me kind of wonders if this is also not quite a fallout from Marvel and the Avengers movies where they're like, let's bring in absolutely everybody, but a little bit of that, of like, people want to see their favorites, and also if we put it on screen, we can sell a toy. We can slap it on a t-shirt. We can, you know, like, I do wonder how much of this was a marketing choice as much as a let's just do it because it's fun to put all the stuff in there.
Yeah, like, the thing I keep thinking about right now is like, there are so many kids movies that I watch where they're overstuffed and the cuts are all so fast and they are talking a mile a minute and there's 27,000 things that happen. And that's actually not what this movie does. Like, it's not edited out the wazoo. It's not talking 700 miles a minute. It actually barely has dialogue half the time. It's a visual spectacle where a lot of crazy and silly things happen, and then sometimes someone makes a joke. And like,
that sounds like a kid's movie.
I think that's a really big difference, because I get really annoyed when the kid's movie is clearly designed to fry your attention span to cope with the fried attention spans by flashing edits every 3.5 seconds. Like, this movie doesn't do that, because it is a little bit more like carefully made. I mean, the Illumination movies generally are a little bit more carefully made like this, where yes, there's a lot of fart jokes, but like they're not doing the TikTok brain editing style that you'll see in other kids movies. And I have heard other examples of kids who are tracking the whole, you know, family thing, and they are asking questions like, well, why did Bowser become mean again by the end? Where it's like, yeah, no, you ask great questions. This movie's not perfect. Yeah. I am not defending some of the choices they make in the story itself. But it's perfectly inoffensive entertainment at the least. And maybe, you know, a decent lesson to learn about friendship and family along the way if you're paying attention enough to have that conversation with your kid. Is it the best example for that? Obviously not. But like, if your kid likes playing the Mario game, this is not a what's the word that the kids use these days? This is not a brain rot version of Mario by any means.
Yeah. Well, I think that's another funny thing is people getting upset about the Mario movie not having a plot. And I'm like, have you played a Mario game?
Right.
Because it is only very recently that any of the Mario games have what I would consider a plot. I mean, like, other than the Paper Mario games that are RPGs, but like the left to right Mario platformers, not particularly story heavy.
And this movie follows the plot of Mario Galaxy pretty reasonably. It actually adds more plot to it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah.
Because they actually, the plot of Mario Galaxy is Bowser's upset and wants to kidnap the princess. There's also a spaceship out there that has Rosalina on it. And Mario has to, you know, go through all these galaxies to get to Bowser and save the princess. That's the whole story of the movie. And there's like that big intro level scene where like you're heading over to the castle and the
shine sprites or whatever. Yeah,
that's the Mario sunshine thing. But the little gems,
oh, the star crystal,
the little gems are falling from the sky. Like, they do all of that in this movie. It sets up all of the same things that the original movie sets up, that the original game sets up, and then it also adds in a bunch of other Mario 2 like characters and plots.
I was surprised to see Wart.
The actual story, because you have to have some kind of plot. And I'm not sure how you do a version of this movie that is closer to what the game is, or a version that has fewer different plot threads going on, because it's really just they're hopping from one level to the next, the same way that any Mario game would.
Yeah, it's the plot of a general Mario game is Bowser takes something, Mario chases him. That it sounds like that they accomplished it.
Yeah, and then you go through 8 very distinct looking worlds, just like this game, just like this movie does.
Yeah, it's, if anything, like, this is, they delivered on the concept of a Mario movie, maybe too good, is what it sounds like. But yeah, I think it's just weird because it's, you know, like we had talked about just in chat when we were like workshopping this episode, you had said like, you know, media literacy is like relatively new as like a value, almost like a, like in human history, it's like this,
not media literacy, but the idea that characters in our stories have to and are supposed to have big growth and evolution over the course of their
plot. That it's a bad story if it ends and you're the same as at the start.
Yeah, that is a relatively recent in human history addition to the way that we do storytelling. Like, people forget that the first novel didn't exist until the late 1800s. Like,
yeah,
stories before that were either like, it was literally, the novel was an invention. To have a several hundred page continuous single story with a plot from beginning to end is like a thing that the Brontes invented, right? And so the idea of storytelling from the beginning of human history began with, you know, what we think of as myths and folk tales and legends, where those characters don't learn shit. Little Red Riding Hood gets eaten by a wolf or whatever, right? Like, there's, the lesson is what you're supposed to learn from these stories. When Apollo chases after Aphrodite or whatever it is that gets turned into a tree, there's no happy ending. There's no lesson that Apollo learns.
It just happens.
You're supposed to learn the lesson because you are told this story over and over again, because stories exist in fixed, like, they're a thing that already happened in the past that we can't change or control because it already happened. When we tell a story, it's in past tense. And, like, we can't, in real life, we don't go around like learning lessons every day that we can write on a piece of paper and easily describe, right? And so even in film, in the early film times, you watch a Charlie Chaplin movie, and sure, maybe there's like a little bit of a lesson that he learns by the end, but it's not like his character grew and changed through the throughout the movie. That's like a new Hollywood 60s, 70s invention that we like suddenly started getting deeper characters and we expect them to I always make the joke about how like, look, the most static character that's ever existed, Jesus Christ, that man was born perfect and died perfect, learned no lesson from beginning to end of his life. He just taught other people lessons. He taught other people lessons. It's the whole point. And like, yeah. It's just not like parables are not designed for the character to learn something. It's for us to learn something.
Well, and it the expectation that depth is for is every character, every whatever, like it's just dishonest to how you as a person engage the world. Like, are you capable of considering the fact that the person bagging your groceries is a fully complex person? Yes, you are capable of that. Do you think about that while that person's bagging your groceries? Do you wonder what morals they've learned that day or what they're going through? Probably not.
Right.
So like the idea having that it's a... like, oh, archetypes are bad storytelling, or you know, having a character not grow is bad. It's like, not necessarily. Sometimes that's just what happens.
Having a dynamic character, if anything, is a like, it's a market advantage. It's not a necessity. It's something that makes your story potentially more interesting, more engaging, more unique than another, so that you choose to engage with that story instead of a different one. But it doesn't make the quality inherently better. You can have a character learn all kinds of lessons, but the story can be told like shit, or the character can be a piece of shit. Although we had that conversation recently about how it's okay if a character is a piece of shit sometimes.
Yeah.
But like, it's a market advantage to try to come up with creative and engaging characters that learn and grow, if that's what the story they're in is designed for. Where like in the Mario Galaxy movie, I think that if Mario stood there up at the end and gave a speech to Luigi about how he is a changed man and he sure is sorry about the way he treated Bowser, we'd all be like, what the hell was that?
That would be so bad. That would be genuinely terrible writing.
It's frankly outside of his character, because it's Mario in these movies is a little bit of a stuck up prick and like thinks he knows better than everyone. And yeah, sure, he's like an affable fella, but he... just because you learn a lesson once at the end of your first movie also doesn't mean that the lesson sticks with you.
Are you conflating how you feel about Mario a little bit with how you can feel about Chris Pratt?
No, like he's a little bit like he's not a, because they're not similar.
He's not religious.
No, not that we know of. I mean,
Mario's going right to hell.
He's Italian. I'm sure he's Catholic, but like it's in his character that he, like, he thinks he knows a little bit better than everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not, look, it's not like he's going to therapy. He's not gonna have a magical experience that makes him realize that maybe he should be a little bit nicer to Bowser and a little bit nicer to Luigi. Like, would it be nice if we had a little bit of that? Sure, I guess it could be, but it might also make no sense. Yeah. And it's incumbent upon us as the viewer to take the lessons of the lessons he doesn't learn, because if he had treated Bowser better, or he had listened to his brother, or he had just, you know, told the princess how he felt, then things would have worked out differently for him. And like, we can learn that lesson on his behalf, even if he doesn't learn that lesson himself.
I would say, yeah, you don't need the learning demonstrated to you. And I think to kind of tie this back to the original premise, like, people, I think, are maybe underestimating what kids can grasp.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you can also overestimate. There can be things that are too subtle for a child or too complex, or the kid just straight up doesn't care. But kids can pick up on basic things like that of like, oh, like why, you know, like spotting bad things like, oh, this character had like a really uncharacteristic moment. What was that about? But they can also piece together of like, oh, he did XYZ because he was scared.
Right.
And then recognizing that, like, maybe fear is not the best thing to inform my decisions. I learned something, even if that character didn't.
Right. Like, a child is fully capable of watching Mario be cruel to Bowser and Bowser reacting by being upset and offended and go, maybe Mario should have been nicer. There's not, like, and Bowser would have reacted differently. It doesn't need to be spelled out in front of them. They can mm-hmm. they can interpret that for themselves, and it's up to the adults around these children to make sure that that's the lesson they're taking away from it, as opposed to haha, look how funny it was to make Bowser feel like garbage because he was really funny when he blew his fire and then got his tail stuck. Like,
yeah,
but like, kids are capable of telling the difference, and the adults that are showing them these movies are capable of helping them have that conversation and take the right things out of stuff. If we're not like, if we're just giving the kids the remote and letting them pick and choose whatever they want to watch without anyone ever knowing, it's not on us when they're not, or it's not on them when they are not media literate or learning how to know interpret the meaning of story or human interaction. Like, it's our job to be helping them through that, and it's our job to be less of idiots ourselves and understand things that kids can understand for themselves.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like, I remember growing up, I was allowed to watch The Simpsons before most of my friends, if not all of them, but I also remember that there were times where my parents were like, well, let's talk about what we just saw. Like, let's get into that story or that beat, and like, let's develop a little media literacy in you. Let's make sure that you understand stories and morals and all that stuff. I think you're right. Like, it's not just on kids. Media does not exist in a vacuum. Like, it is also on the parents or the guardians and whoever is engaging the kids with this media or showing it to them. I will say the one thing to the credit of like people who were upset about this movie, I think because kids are, impressionable and learning and growing, there is a little bit of an obligation that it isn't unreasonable to be like, I would like to show my child quality movies. Like, that's totally fair. I think it's just a question of like, what's your definition of a quality movie for a child? Like, not everything is going to be Mr. Rogers or Sesame Street, where it's like slow paced, education focused, whatever. Like, there's going to be kids movies that, like, it's a good kids movie, but it's also like funny and slapstick and a little manic and kind of goes everywhere. But they can still, like, think about, this is an insane sentence. Think about Woody's character arc in Toy Story, where he like is immediately insecure and jealous on meeting Buzz. And like, kids can kind of pick up on that of like, oh, Woody's like scared of being replaced and yada. And it's like, oh yeah, okay, that's like, your kid pieced that together. At no point is Woody just like, I'm afraid that Andy won't love me anymore. Like, he's just, he's misdirecting his feelings at Buzz, and kids can figure that out. I think there's this thing of like, yes, I want kids movies to be good and educational, but like you were saying, like, it doesn't need to be, we don't need every single movie or show for kids to end with that South Park wrap up of like, I learned something today, and then like a 30-second monologue about what happened.
Yeah, and it's also okay to not like the Mario movie. There's plenty of reasons to not like it. I think just like, interrogate what is the reason why you're not liking it. Is it because, do you think it's bad because they're just not doing the thing that kids movies should do to you? Or is it because you're just not engaged by the thing that is happening in it? If you're not into the kind of humor or the style of story, like, that's totally reasonable. But to complain about how it's overstuffed or how it's, the characters aren't developed is just nonsense and not a reasonable expectation of, like, this is the thing we talk about all the time editorially at BYU, that was like, are you reviewing this movie based on your expectations of what this movie should be doing? Or are you reviewing this movie based on the expectations the movie has set for you? And it's not like you can't have your own expectations and have that play a part. Our nostalgia is, our feelings about what we do and don't like are totally valid and a part of this. But we have to also take into consideration, what is the thing designed to be? And is it doing that successfully? Those are both important parts of the criticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was there's a now defunct Simpsons podcast that I used to listen to, and they would just watch episodes and then review them and rate them and see. They were trying to find which is like the worst episode of The Simpsons ever made. So it was a lot of like the new stuff. But one thing that I appreciate is that they would never say what would have been better without first clarifying why what they did didn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, where it's like, I'm going to critique the art on the grounds that, like, I'm going to meet it where it's at and say, like, here's why that joke wasn't that funny or why it didn't really work. And then, like, okay, if I'm going to punch up this script, here's what I think might have been a little bit better or what might have, like, maintained, like, continuity of character. Like, that moment was really out of left field for that character. It doesn't make any sense with the established lore. Here's why. And then here's how you keep that scene but tweak it to make it make more sense. And it's like, oh, that's a thoughtful way to review it, to, like, you know, let it speak for itself first and then go, okay, now here's why I don't think that was good.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. It's easy to watch something and then critique it based on what you were hoping for versus what they did.
Right. And I also think that it's totally cool if you are someone who, like, if you're trying to curate the things that you're showing to a child,
mm-hmm.
and you are gravitating towards the things that you grew up watching and, you know, enjoyed, that's so fine too, because a thing that you're connecting with, even if it's not any better or worse than the Mario Galaxy movie, is something that you're going to have a better opportunity to connect with a child over, yeah. or explain or talk to a child about, because you're actually invested in it and you have your own, you know, way of engaging with it. So, like, mm-hmm. even if your favorite 2000s movie is actually complete garbage, but you think it's an important thing to be sharing with your child, slash it's, you know, better kids movie than quote unquote Mario Galaxy movie, like, there's nothing wrong with having preferences and having things that you're more engaged with. Just mm-hmm. also means accepting that when your child gets excited about the Mario Galaxy movie because they thought it was fun and their marketing for it is great and all their friends are talking about it, that mm-hmm. is also probably pretty valid too.
Yeah. And I think also there needs to be an acknowledgement of, like, storytelling styles change.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, how often are people like, oh, I don't watch black and white movies, they're old and boring. And it's like, well, it was literally just like we were figuring out what to do with cameras. Like, there's a reason some old movies look like someone just filmed a play, because more or less someone just filmed a play. And that was the style of storytelling they were going for. And then like 80s teen comedies versus 90s teen comedies versus 2000s teen comedies. Like, storytelling, even within a genre, evolves over time and shifts in really unique ways. So it's like, your kid might enjoy that old thing you showed them and then also be like, but the Mario movie kind of rules and is more my thing.
Yeah. Every single story told in the late 70s after Watergate was about whether we trust each other or not. And every single story that was told in the 80s after, you know, Reagan made us all trust each other again, apparently, is about whether the American dream is being fulfilled or not. Every single story. This is not an exaggeration about these eras. And now every single story today is about whether we are living through fascism or not. And, like, these are, like, when we look back on this era of stories, we will see that 80% of the stories being told in every medium are mm-hmm. in some way or another about this same central cultural question that is going on. And you can find the different version of that or the flavor of it in smaller periods across all of time, mm-hmm. I'm sure. We're like, the questions that we are interested in grappling with or the things within culture and society that we're interested in engaging with might just be different. I am more interested in engaging with questions about the American dream right now than I am about fascism, because I'm living in fascism and the American yeah. dream is a joke. So, like, it's, you know, my preference right now is certainly for things from that era over many things from this, but also, like, 10 more years from now, maybe I'll be so fed up with, you know, the stories we were telling at one time and be nostalgic mm-hmm. for the things happening in the 2020s where every single movie was an allegory about Trump and or Elon Musk.
Yeah, it's honestly, I watched Mickey 17 and that was my biggest frustration, because that's not in the original book. That whole Trump character is not... The character is in the book. The character is not a Trump allegory in the book.
Couldn't stand it. I had seen too many movies about Trump in the last.
That's honestly, that's valid.
I walked out.
my biggest issue is that that's going to make that movie feel dated, like, forever. Like, you will watch that in 20 years and be like, oh, right, I know exactly when this came out.
Yeah.
I think all that to say, like, I get why people want to hold kids' media to a standard at all, for sure. Like, the pit is bottomless and full of Cocomelon. But at the same time, give your kids some credit. They don't need everything spelled out for them. And also, not everything is going to need to have like a moral or a story that is explicitly stated. Kids movies more than anything, I think, just like, yeah, they kind of do get a free pass. Like, they're a kids movie. And if your example of good kid movies are just things that traumatized you, like The Land Before Time and The Neverending Story, or seeing Angelica Houston peel her face off in Witches, like, if that's your go-to for like a good kids movie, like, maybe go to therapy. I don't know. Like, I feel like that's something to interrogate in yourself. But yeah, that's all I've got on this. I don't know if you have any closing thoughts.
I think I've said my piece.
Now, have you reviewed on Letterboxd the Mario movie?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the review was something to the like of, you're all crazy, this movie's fine.
Perfect. That's no notes. That's about what I expected. But yeah, so that does it for this week. If you listening at home want more, we do have it, But Why Though is on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net. You can subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, or donate money by going to butwhytho.net/support. Everything that you give goes towards the site, keeps it running, keeps the lights on, helps us to pay our writers, helps us to make the stuff that you enjoy. So please consider taking either of those actions, whatever you can. We greatly appreciate it. Jason, thank you for joining me. It was great to talk about this movie, talk about kids' movies, talk about all of that. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next week.
I was close. It was everyone chill. This movie is perfectly fine, and there is nothing wrong with its fan service.